Chapter 50 Shepherding. Lovest thou me? Feed my sheep. Jesus. 1886. In the fall of 1885, an apostate student who professed to have, quote, discovered an improvement on Christian Science, end quote, was bleating for, quote, large flocks in mind traffic, wandering about without a leader, end quote, to follow him into, quote, a national convention, end quote. In the November Journal, Mrs. Eddy labeled this man, quote, a wolf in sheep's clothing, end quote. The true leader was ever seeking methods to protect and defend her lambkins and her cause. In her words, for many successive years, I have endeavored to find new ways and means for the promotion and expansion of scientific mind healing, and, if possible, to build a hedge round about it that should shelter its perfections from the contaminating influences of those who have a small portion of its letter and less of its spirit. The Christian Scientists Association was restricted to graduates of the college. Many teachers now had associations of their own, and Mrs. Eddy saw a need for unification. In January, she proposed the formation of a National Christian Scientist Association, which would be open to all the students. An organizational meeting was held in New York City on the 10th of February, and the first annual meeting 2 months later in Boston on the 14th of April. The leader also recommended that her students charter schools for teaching the rudiments of Christian Science. By midsummer, the California Metaphysical Institute was advertising in the columns of the journal, followed by several more in various locations. From the editorship of the Christian Science Journal, Emma Hopkins had gone to Chicago to edit Swartz's Mind Cure magazine, but Mrs. Eddy soon found an able replacement. The man who had been highly recommended as a literary aide by her printer, John Wilson, she had found to be exceptionally capable and accurate. By the dawn of the new year, she had engaged Mr. Wiggin to edit the journal, while Sarah Cross continued as manager and publisher. Reverend Wiggin had left the ministry several years earlier because of his disbelief in the Bible, and he now had the same feeling towards Science and Health, although his academic knowledge of that book far exceeded that of most students. When a California clergyman attacked Mrs. Eddy and her work with the venom that had shown itself in Boston a year earlier, he came forth with a well-reasoned defense, biblically refuting the clerical censure. Published as Christian Science and the Bible by Fair Play, this pamphlet found ready acceptance among scientists. Mrs. Eddy had a high regard for Wiggins's logic and fair-mindedness, and invited him to join her next class, which was to convene March 29th. That gentleman proposed to attend as an observer, declining to become a student. He was perfectly satisfied with his own philosophy, and his mind was closed to the acceptance of the truth of Christian Science. After meeting this closed thought in the classroom, the teacher wrote him, "You were wise in your conclusions about not entering the class at present as a student, and I will do as you sagely suggested. In other words, pass you by with my questions, and that will elicit no debate." Though he refused to allow the teacher to contend with his opinions, he was not untouched by her ability. In the May Journal, under the caption, quote, "In the classroom," end quote, he said, "From hearing Mrs. Eddy preach, from reading her book, however carefully, from talking with her, you do not get an adequate idea of her mental powers. Not only is she glowingly earnest in presenting her convictions, but her language and illustrations are remarkably well drawn. She is quick in repartee and keenly turns a jest upon her questioner, but not offensively or unkindly. She reads faces rapidly. A brief exposition of the Book of Job, which one day entered incidentally into her statement of how God is to be found, would have done honor to any ecclesiastic. Critical listeners are often astonished at the stronghold she has upon her thought and at the clearness of her statements, even when they cannot agree with her. While she is sharp to detect variations from her own views and to expose the difference, she governs herself in the midst of discussion. In fact, Reverend M.B.G. Eddy is a natural class leader, and 3 hours pass away in her lessons before you know it." Despite the clerical attacks and her inability to reach Reverend Wiggin, Mrs. Eddy still had hopes that the clergy would accept Christian Science and become the leaders of the flock. 3 clergymen, in addition to Wiggin, had accepted her generous offer of free tuition, and the Reverends Joseph Adams, George Day, and William Gill had attended the course eager to learn Christian Science. Following the class, Reverend Day returned to Chicago and began preaching for the infant church just organizing in that city. Mrs. Eddy invited Reverend Adams to preach to her church at Chickering Hall, but the members were dissatisfied with him as assistant pastor, and in June invited Reverend Gill to fill that position. William I. Gill was a man of letters with several books to his credit. After attending the college course, he had written Mrs. Eddy, "I find myself developing a strange intellectual affinity with you and your work. I now see that you are and will be one of the greatest benefactors of our time." Gill was given increased opportunity for proving his sincerity and ability in August when Mrs. Eddy made him editor of the journal, which was growing steadily. Adams and Day were included in the next normal class in the fall. Though she had fond hopes for clergymen and gave to them lavishly and freely, all of her students underwent training and testing. The more capable the student, the more severe the test. Her, quote, "chosen disciple," end quote, Augusta Stenson, had had normal training in the spring. In the fall, Mrs. Eddy sent a reluctant Augusta to New York City, but she was subjected to an unusual and rather severe test before that time. Mrs. Stetson had done a good deal of work in Reading, Massachusetts. One day Mrs. Eddy told her that if she could secure a hall and an audience including clergymen, she would come there to speak. Mrs. Stetson wrote of this time, "I immediately went to work and with the help of my patients engaged the Congregational Church. 4 ministers were invited, And when the evening came, the assembled audience occupied every seat. The four clergymen sat at the foot of the platform, but Mrs. Eddy was not there. I had gone to 3 trains in the afternoon to meet her, and at last, in despair, I entered the church. I was in a dilemma. I was embarrassed because Mrs. Eddy did not appear, and I felt that I ought to apologize to the audience for her non-appearance. I had made no preparation to address this large assembly, and I had never lectured on Christian Science. I was desperate. I called on God to give me wisdom and to know whether to apologize or to do the best I could to give them some idea of the science of being. Finally, I decided that I must speak the word. I addressed them for 1.5 hours, prefacing my remarks with the statement that Mrs. Eddy must have been detained, but if they desired to hear me, I would do the best I could. The next morning, I went directly to Mrs. Eddy and told her that I thought it was most unkind for her to put me in that position. I asked, "Why did you not come?" She answered, "I was there." She smiled at my innocence and ignorance. She said, "But you stood, Augusta. You stood. You did not run."